Welcome to the I Am Podcast, enrichment for the ears of those who are always learning. Brought to you by the Avon-Maitland District School Board. Episode 1. If you've had moments where you wanted to run for the hills while the fighting, arguing, or misbehavior in some form of another raged in the background, you're probably a parent. Conflict happens. The question is, how do we deal with it effectively? Quick fix answers and angry reactions, though tempting, do not teach our children the lasting values of respect, kindness, and healthy problem solving. Teresa Bowler, a parent, educator, and counselor, discusses the reality of conflict in our homes and schools and shares an effective approach to teach our children the importance of having hope, honesty, ownership, apology, plan as a response to conflict.
We're going to always have curriculum. We're going to do our best to educate these wonderful minds that come to this building. But in the end, we want them to know how to be decent, kind human beings in the world. And that also means we have to be willing to do the work on that as well ourselves. Because I know for myself, I'm not always decent and kind. I'd like to think I am, but I know myself better than that. So it takes awareness to do this. And it means we have to be able to talk to each other. So this is a conflict resolution approach. I already mentioned that I learned it by being a teacher, by doing the things that I used to think would work, like trying to micromanage and control but act like I wasn't. Similar in my marriage, you know, you try to passively, aggressively manipulate things. It doesn't go well. Even when you're pretending and smiling and acting, aren't I wonderful? Right? So really what it comes down to is how do we actually work in a way where all parties involved are respected. All parties get to have a say. All parties at the table get to be heard. And this, in the same way that it's voluntary for you to be here tonight, so is the HOPE approach. Hopefully when you're doing this conflict resolution in the school, you want to invite the kids who are in conflict with each other, or the teachers, or the teachers with the kids, or parents, right? We want to be able to invite people. Some people won't want to come. Some kids will not want to be involved in it. They'll like the old school, give me a punishment, I'll go home, do what I'm supposed to do for 3 days, play Call of Duty, and come back ready to punch someone in the face. That's an option. I don't think it's the best one. So this is by invitation. You ask the kids, would you like to solve this problem? This is what it's about. And don't ask them to do it on their own. They won't necessarily know how to do it, but they are being invited. Okay, so it's giving them an opportunity to be honest. And I think if we're honest, we know that we're not always honest. So don't expect your kids to be right off the bat honest, but you might be shocked and amazed at how honest they are. And I usually defer to someone who's using the process to see that that's true. And I know Ange uses it. I had a lovely experience with Kelsey, who came to the retreat to do yoga one night, because Kelsey's a friend of my daughter's. And I was thinking, so what are you doing now? Where are you? And she told me she was here. And I said, oh, that's awesome. You're working with Angie. That's great. And she says, yeah, and I'm doing this thing, this hope thing. I said, really? That's amazing. I'd love you to teach me about that someday. Anyway, but so I know you're using it at times. And if you are, it doesn't mean it's a foolproof everything goes perfectly every time. It doesn't, and neither does punishment. Nothing has a foolproof outcome. But have you noticed that when you give kids an opportunity to be honest, that they surprise you?
Usually, I've been surprised.
Yeah, it is surprising. I know you have mentioned that, Ange. Right? It's surprising when you give them an opportunity, when you don't assume the worst, when you hold a space for them to be their better selves, it's amazing what can come forward. You might even surprise yourself if you sit down and sit with someone who you have conflict with and who you might prefer to keep your not-so-wonderful parts of yourself hidden, but then there's a gentler, kinder space created, and you feel a little safer, and then you find yourself saying maybe a little more than you thought you would, and it didn't go quite as bad as you thought it would. So I hope that the honesty part will make sense to you. The ownership, you just help them identify what's going on in them personally. And we'll go through these in a lot more detail, but the apology, teaching the power of an apology rather than you need to say sorry now. Okay, now you say sorry. Okay, get out of here. That's not what an apology is, okay? And the last one is helping them create a plan. so that they can avoid the likelihood of the conflict occurring again. But you and I know they're kids, so conflict is going to occur again, just like it does in your house and it does in your relationships. So don't have a false expectation that they'll never have conflict again. It just gives them some way to minimize the likelihood of it happening again. So that's what this is. That's what hope is. Peace cannot be kept by force. It can only be achieved through understanding. This is a wonderful quote by Albert Einstein. And if you don't know this about Albert Einstein, here's something you're learning today. He did win the Nobel Prize. Did you know that? Does everyone know who Albert Einstein is, for starts? Okay. Just realize, I don't want to assume. Okay. A lot of people think he won it for science, for his work in science. He actually won it for his work on peace. Because he saw that what happened when they split the atom, that they now had the potential to literally obliterate the human race. He realized how much power was being unleashed, and that we better be very aware, very mindful souls about how we use power on this earth. And so he became very, very actively involved in working towards peace. And that's what he won the Nobel Prize for. And he understood this. So no matter how much we want our kids to be peaceful, to get along in school, get along in our homes, we cannot force it. I know, because I've tried. It doesn't work. If it worked, I would have kept doing it. But we see that on the planet. So recognizing that, we will do a little more. We take a different approach. And it's always about us supporting the kids, helping them, that we want to help them with these things. We can't force it and we can't guarantee it. We're just helping create the conditions, which I mentioned for a moment already. So another big reason I'm here is I actually am one of those crazy optimists on the planet that actually believes there is hope, not just the H-O-A-P guy, that there is hope, that we can treat each other with more kindness, that our schools can be safer places, that our schools can be places where children are actually called forward to be their best selves and not just feeling overwhelmed by too much curriculum and all the rest of it, but we can balance these things. And ultimately that we can work towards. I'm not idiotic. I don't have any vision of the world. We all sit around passing flowers to each other's ears, but we can do it better, and it takes the work. Most of us try it with external control, and even in the world, we try it with weapons and, you know, external power force systems. It hasn't gone too well, if you haven't watched the news lately. Okay? It's not working. So on this point, I'm not being facetious. If we actually want to create cultures of peace or kindness in our schools, we will have to do the inner work as educators. If we want to create cultures of kindness in our homes, we will have to do the inner work as parents. In our marriage, we'll have to do the inner work as a partner. Most of us don't spend a lot of time on that. That's what I see. Although I do get to spend most of my days with people who come wanting, they want this. They just want the other person to change, so they can have it in their house. And it doesn't work. We have to do it ourselves. And then the people around us start doing it. Our children will do it. Our students will be more likely to do it if we're teachers who speak to them with compassion, if we reach out to them with understanding, even though they might be causing behaviors that make us want to rip our hair out of our head, that we have a way of cultivating an inner calm so we can respond to them and not personalize what's going on. And so this lovely wisdom from Lao Tzu, which was the founder of Taoism, but what does it mean? How do we have peace in our heart? You all came here. I have to say, such a nice vibe in this school. Nice, really nice energy. It's not always the case, so it's really nice that that's happening in this school. But yeah, that you're coming, you're being together, you're being collegial. But our inner state, I'm actually going to do something that I've always done, even back in the day when I was in the classroom, but also in my home on a regular basis, is with the clients I work with or in my own life, to actually slow down and create an opportunity for some quiet, some inner peace. So I'm going to just give you an opportunity because I hope that it might inspire even just one of you, if you're not currently making a little bit of this time in your classroom. This is so that we don't have to go to the hope process all the time, that we're actually creating space for kids to just have even 2 minutes of just quiet when they come back in from recess or whatever it is, and just a couple of minutes. And you can go, okay, you know what? That would be great in an ideal world, but we don't have time for that because we have to get them ready for EQAO. There's no time. I guarantee you, you make time for these things, they're learning expedites. And the reason it does is that when we're calmer, when we're not in our survival brain, your hind brain, the amygdala, overactive amygdala, where we're in that stress mode, when we slow down, when we reintegrate, when we rebalance, return to our own homeostasis, we think more clearly. This isn't me just wishing it were true. All the science is out on this, folks. If you doubt it at all, Google. The amygdala, what happens when it's fired up, which is what most of us are doing. We're coming in and we're in a rush to get on with things. And so are our kids. Some of them are coming from very challenged homes. Even the homes that aren't challenged, that are just overly scheduled, maybe. Got to get to this practice, then we got to get to there. And now I got to get here. So 2 minutes, I highly encourage it. And we're going to take 2 minutes now. You don't have to be anyone's teacher right now. You don't have to be anyone's spouse. You don't have to be anyone's parent. You don't have to be anyone's anything just for these 2 minutes. And if you're thinking, okay, once that's over, then what? Just notice and smile at how quickly the brain does this. We want to move on to what's down the road or perseverate on what's in the past. And just learning to come into the moment calmly will do you an enormous amount of good with this process, but also just in general, how we meet our day. So I'm going to just invite you to close your eyes, or if that's uncomfortable in any way for you, to just rest your eyes down towards your heart. And let it be okay if your mind is going, oh my God, what a waste of time. Smile at that thought, because it's just a thought. And it's a thought that my mind used to have when I resisted slowing down too. And just begin by noticing your own breath. It probably smells like pizza, so I don't mean that kind of breath. Just noticing your own breath in terms of how it feels to take in a breath and to not have to judge it as being too shallow or anything else. Just letting your body relax into the breath. And as you do that, you may notice that there is a shortness of breath. And that would be very common because we're in our shallow breathing a lot of the time, which means our body's not functioning at its optimum, and neither is our brain. So if you notice it's a shallow breath, don't try and force it to be a deep breath. Just notice it and just soften as you take in your next breath. Soften whatever edges you feel. And just letting it be okay to simply slow down and breathe. You may also notice when you're relaxing into the breath that your body might have some tension held in it. Just breathe a gentle breath to that part of your body. Give your body permission to let go of the tension it's holding. The same is true for the kids you teach. They're coming to school very tight and tense at times. What a nice thing to have a space in a day, even just a couple of minutes, to soften the tension in the body. For them to know that they come to a school where there's time to be a human being, not just a human doing, just to be. And on your next breath in, just breathe a breath of peace to your mind. A breath of peace to your body. That doesn't mean all the things we have to deal with disappear. They don't. We're just in a better state to meet them, to face them, when we slow down and take a few quiet breaths. And if you can now, take a moment and just picture the students you work with. If it's in a class or if you're responsible for some one-to-one with a child, the students that you work with, just picture them before you. And picture them just with their eyes closed and relaxing and being able to just breathe. And you wishing them peace, you wishing them calm and a gentle place inside themselves. And you're saying, that is a fantasy that will never occur. That might be what your thoughts will say. And that's okay, if that's what it's been so far. But what if our schools became places where a little bit of time was given in a day? Just to be quiet within ourselves and a quiet space held with others. Where everybody doesn't have to be right. People just can just be, just learn to breathe and be. It's the first thing you do when you come into the world, and it's the last thing we will do before we leave this world, before we shuffle off this mortal coil, as Shakespeare calls it. And we'll breathe every breath in between, and how it might be different if we learn to breathe quieter, deeper, gentler, and kinder within ourselves, turning off the have-to-all-the-time mind. So my hope and my intention for each of you as educators and for the children who are blessed to come and be taught by you, is that you'll find a way to build a little bit of time into your day so you can be gentler with yourself and gentler with them. I've seen the miracles that this can create. Transformation happens in that space, that quiet space. And so when you're ready, you can just gently open your eyes. If you want to take a moment and smile at the people beside you, go ahead. It won't kill you. See if your neck will turn. Look. Oh, my. Look at that. We can smile. So it's okay if you dozed off during that. And if you drooled, wipe up. If any part of you was resisting that the whole time, that's okay too. There's no rules. It's just creating an opportunity. If you decide to create that opportunity for your students that you work with, don't have any rules about how they're supposed to experience it. You're just creating the space for it. And they slowly start to come to it. Some of the biggest wing nuts I've ever taught. Honestly, Fridays were our days for just, and some of the ones that you least expected, especially in high school. We're like, are we doing that breathing thing today, miss? There'll be no breathing today. We'll be holding our breaths the entire class. I know CPR. Okay, so, but it's amazing, especially the kids who most need it. They respond sometimes more quickly than you think, and the ones you think they'll just bounce off the wall, sometimes they're a little bouncy. Let them get their laughs out. But they slowly start to want it. They know it feels good. You don't have to force them to like a little bit of peace. It's in us. It's in us. That's why we fall asleep at night. And those of us who have trouble falling asleep at night are wanting it even more. It's in us to have quiet. Watch a baby sleep. No one has to teach it to sleep and breathe those big full belly breaths, right? Babies are the ultimate yogis. They breathe, they fill their belly up, they breathe out, They smile, they coo, right? They're good teachers to us. Now, the no-nonsense part of me knows that some of you are like, okay, enough with that. What about this hope thing? What I really want to say to you is, and I went to a wonderful conference, not this past March, so not this month, but a year ago, March, in New York, called the Mindfulness in Education Conference, and was blessed with just hundreds and hundreds of people who recognized we've got to create some space for kids and each other, and some phenomenal speakers there, including a couple of the people who, these books are here, if you feel like having a little look afterwards, please feel welcome to, but just people who understand, this is, no one's asking you to have meditated for 30 years before you do this. You breathe, we breathe, this is what we do. And if we slow down, make space for it, we breathe better, we speak better when we come out. Did anybody come out of that going, man, I want to punch someone in the face? It just doesn't happen. Okay? Now you might be back there already again, but no one comes out of a quiet breathing thing going, I wish I had a gun. It just doesn't happen. Okay? It happens when we're in the middle of conflict with people where we might not go for a weapon. We're Canadians, after all. But our level of hostility actually recalibrates itself into a calm when we make space for it. So I'm asking you to just consider trusting that creating quieter space for kids actually will do some of the work itself. Because your children, unless you think students were born little psychopaths that we have to stronghold into being good people. I hope you don't believe that. Please tell me you don't, because I hope you didn't become an educator thinking that. They're already born wonderful, just like you were, just like I was, okay? And creating space for them to remember that about themselves and remembering it about each other is a really good thing. And time helps. So that's what that last line is about, creating peace in our own heart. On that note, I'll share a little, you can think about that. I probably shouldn't have pushed it just yet. I had a mother come to see me this morning who I've been seeing for, you know, a couple of months now. She initially brought her son, who very, very troubled right now, little 8-year-old boy. And, you know, split family, new families for this little guy, a lot of stress for this little soul, a lot of fragmentation going on for him. And it's coming out in angry language and whipping things around the house and going after the baby of the new coupling that's gone on. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. In fact, being a rocket scientist probably wouldn't help with this, but you don't have to be a psychologist to figure out this little boy is overwhelmed. He's an overwhelmed little lad. And he doesn't know what to do with it. And he's doing all the things we wish they wouldn't do. Just like sometimes we do things that we wish we wouldn't do when we're overwhelmed. But he won the OMHA championships this weekend while he was away at hockey with his mom and the stepdad, who's a lovely man who's doing everything he can to love this little guy up. But his biological dad didn't come. Even though I phoned him beforehand and said, this is all the rest of it. And I see your faces. Most people become teachers because they're empaths. I see your faces. We all know that, what that must have been like. And so the mom did everything she could to contact the dad, contact the grandpa, just saying, listen, they're in the championship. You know, it'd be really great if you could be there. Very positive invitation to join, all of that. This man has his own reasons for not being there. And a few minutes in of hearing the background story for him, you can see how he came by it honestly. All the same cycles repeating themselves over. I share this little bit because when he phoned this morning, right? He phoned, the boy phoned his dad, his biological dad last night, to then tell him, we won it, we won, you know. And he never picked up the phone. 4 calls, no picking up. The mom's texting saying, please pick up your phone. He wants to tell you this news. All the things that we would hope for this little boy. It didn't happen. We don't know why. We don't know where the dad was. It doesn't matter. It's out of our control. This morning he phoned before school, and the little boy said, I don't want to talk to him. And she, you know, this is where I would go through some counseling. She said, you have to, right? This was her. We talked about whether that was the best approach or not, but nonetheless, that's how she handled it. And the little boy got on the phone, and he was so mad, understandably. And he went off, got his things, went to school. As she was dropping him off at school, he said to her, "When I get home tonight, I want to phone Dad and say sorry." This is what's in children. Even this little boy that is whipping the crap out of that house, it's in him. He wants to be at peace. This is in us all. So the same is true for the little ones troubled in your classes that are struggling. They need people who hold a bigger space and a better vantage point of why they're behaving. Even if you don't even know why, you can use your awareness to say, there must be something really unsettled in this little one, or this big one, if you ever go on to teach high school, or if you have teenagers. Something unsettled. Hurt people, hurt people. This is the way. Healed people tend not to hurt people. So let's create those conditions, because those kids are coming to us hurt sometimes. You're coming to teach hurt sometimes. Have compassion for one another's journeys. We all have a lot on our plates. It's the human condition. So this kindness, this peace in our hearts will make all the difference. Having said this, a lot of people aren't coming to school feeling great, and they take it out on others. Any idea? Anybody want to throw out a number? Don't be afraid of being wrong. I was way off when I first read this before I saw the answer. We don't care about right and wrong with this. We're just looking at what do we have a sense of out there. Anyone want to take a guess? And if no one wants to, take a cue from what's happening here. What it's like to be a kid in our class when we're asking them questions and they're afraid to answer. They're us and we're them, okay? They're us and we're them. Right now you're them and I'm you. I'm the teacher asking a question and no one wants to answer because they might be wrong and people think they're stupid. We're still all 5 years old inside. It's in there in us, okay? Let's have compassion for that. And since no one wants to answer, per month, what does that mean? It can mean a lot of things. There's a lot of ways to look at this. One is maybe understanding what bullying actually is. That's part of it. But that's still a lot of reporting that something's not right here, that a kid is reporting that this has happened, that there is hurt being cycled out there again and again and again. I really don't want to make this like about charts and stats, but I think it is important to be informed. So sometimes we see things. This is how we know about all the different ways we learn. Sometimes we see things. Sometimes we hear things. They stick. Seeing them, they stick. Feeling them, they really stick. I bet everyone in this room, put up your hand if you have never ever had someone call you a name or insult you. If you've never, you've gone through life and that hasn't happened to you yet. Because I'm going to start if you haven't had the experience. I want you to have it. I want you to have it so you can empathize. Point is, we all have. We've all been there. Imagine if coming to work every day we had to worry that our colleagues were going to call us a bitch on the way in the door. Or you slut. You fag. Imagine. And this is happening in our schools all the time. Not because these kids are monsters, but because they're not being taught too much about self-awareness and that their hurt has to be healed or it's likely going to go outside of them to someone else. This is the way. Just like our hurt goes outside of us if we don't become aware and find a better way to handle our hurts. So this is an extraordinarily high number. If you look at the fact that in Canada, there's not too many weapons-related issues, thankfully. We know that's different south of the border. But looking at what they are, what are the biggest ones? What are the biggest ones? Lori? Say them out loud. Some people will get it more when we hear it.
Like the name calling, definitely.
And is that true here? Okay.
And I think, Lori, the staff that reported, 82.5% of staff that did the, not of our staff, but that did the survey,
yes,
reported that name calling and insults is the number one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's interesting to see that.
Yeah, it bears itself out. Mm-hmm. So it's really good to deal with what's going on in our reality, mm-hmm. Okay? These are kind of universal, unfortunately. But having said that, the old adage you and I grew up with, sticks and stones will break my bones and names will never hurt me, is a lie. We know it's a lie. Mm-hmm. In fact, many people will say they got over the physical stuff, not that I'm advocating that at all, in any way, but the persistent damage done by hearing things said to you that sabotage your very being, that insult your sense of who you are. Not only is it damaging because it's been done to you, many of us, and I work every day with people in this exact scenario, it becomes their inner story. It becomes what they're saying inside themselves. In fact, in many cases, we're much harder on ourselves than other people are. But if you're getting that as well outside, it's a tough battle to get out of bed in the morning and get here. It's a tough battle to focus on, what's this math problem? Oh my God, how do you spell that? They can't. The research is in, folks. Brain science, all the neuroscience on this. You cannot do higher thinking. You cannot do it when you're in survival mode. When you're in the three Fs, fight, flight, or freeze. Right? And if you're afraid someone's just waiting to pounce on you with something, calling you something, or worse, the shoving and the hitting, okay? All these things, they take their toll. And our little ones and our big ones and our really big ones, even in high school, the big, strong-looking guy walking through the door has his story too. None of us handle it well. It upsets our very core, and it upsets our ability to learn, to think clearly. Are you aware of that? Do you guys know that that's the science on this? That when kids are stressed, when anyone's stressed, you can't learn? Okay, because you're just maintaining. You're just holding. So if you're afraid that it's wasted time to take time for some quiet in your class, take time, talk about kindness, talk about, you know, what's going on here? Anything that's troubling you? Let's talk about that. How can we work through this? The incident offender as grade level. What do you see there? What are the grades where there's the biggest increase in bullying? And this doesn't mean it's always this, but it bears itself out around. What are the biggest grades there? Where does it start picking up and where does it peak? Where do you see? Yeah?
The junior grades.
Okay. 7, 8. Okay. So I don't want to condescend to you because I think we probably can figure out what's going on in grade 6, 7, and 8. Starts with H.
Hormones.
Hormones, right? Their bodies are changing. So much is changing. I was about to tell you, I went to a doctor's appointment for a pap test recently and with my daughter. And while I was there, I ran into a woman who used to be an EA back in the day when I was teaching at CHSS. I loved her to death. We had a big old hug and chatted away. She's working at Mitchell now and blah, blah, blah. But this lovely soul was there with her daughter, who's in grade 9, who's just gone through a massive growth spurt. Huge, really tall. I met her, gave her a big old hug when I saw her too. 6'2". This girl is at the doctor's because she won't go to school now. She's overwhelmed. The kids are on her all the time because of stretch marks. Right? She's got stretch marks through this big growth spurt. Right? Again, I see your faces. We understand. We've been there. We've been there in some form or other. On all sides of it, maybe, too. Right? What's happening? So much changing and not really knowing how to manage it. They need us, folks. They need kind adults around who understand. We can't solve all the problems. We can't go in and tell those kids, you better be nice to her. Stop telling her. Good luck with that. Okay? It doesn't typically work. They might stop it in front of you, but it goes on a lot harder when you leave the room. That's why they don't tell us. If they think we're going to come in and try to dominate and tell everyone what to do, they're not going to tell us anything. They need us to create a space where first we let them know that they are loved. And I know we don't speak the language of love in our schools a lot. Find another way to say it. I always use the word love because I'm happy to use the word love. But that they are wonderful, that they matter to us, that we're so glad we know them. We need them to know these things, but then we also have to help create the conditions where we talk about these things. I'm sure that the five girls going after her about her stretch marks are looking in the mirror and beating themselves up every day, too, about something that's not perfect, right? We don't want to pass this on as, oh, well, that's just girls. We can do better. We can do better. And we need to help them know we've been there, we've seen it, there's a way through. There's a kinder, gentler way through this and create the space for it. But grades 6, 7, 8, and 9 starts picking up. So these hormonal changes are factors. That's not the only thing. Hormones aren't the only reason we struggle, but that's a big one, having sensitivity to that. I remember back in the day when I taught grade 6 that I saw some crazy mean behaviors in the grade 6 classrooms. And what I saw were kids hurting because they were hurting and doing anything they could to, you know, network and be safe. So I think we all see those things. I don't need to spell that out too much. But if we just think by pointing fingers and telling them, be nice, how effective has that been? I'm just curious. Okay? It's not very effective. Some of them are extremely nice in front of us, but we leave the room and we see it go down. And that's any of the grades. But your grade 6 boys, it's already started, and it starts even earlier. But how many of you are hearing, or wait till you see the next slide, or the two from here maybe, about what we actually see as educators versus what the kids see? Different worlds. Looking through different lenses, seeing different worlds. But how many of you are hearing homophobic insulting going on? Put up your hand if you've heard it in the school. Somebody calling someone a fag, a homo, that's gay. Put up your hand. Only a few of you. Okay. Well, this is a prime example of this. Not that, but it is a relationship problem. This Dr. Deborah Pepler, by the way, I love her and highly recommend you look into the work of her. She worked out of York University, but she's sort of Canada's, I always call her Canada's Barbara Coloroso. She's doing a lot of the work on the front. But you can't solve relationship problems with punishment. They need relationship solutions. They involve communication and empathy. This is part of her research. Our perception as educators versus the reality that's happening there for our kids. 23% of the students reported that teachers intervened often or almost always while it was going on. If you ask teachers, they felt that 71% of the time they were intervening and problem solving. That's a big discrepancy. Not because we're morons or we're blind, because kids do it very little in front of us. Right? We have to just accept that. We're seeing maybe one quarter of what's happening there. So that's why we want to give them the tools to be kinder, better people, instead of thinking we're going to micromanage our classrooms to death. Okay? 56% said they have been bullied, and 42% that they admitted to bullying others at least once. I know when we talked about this last time, I think Ange has a nice way that she deals with this, so I'm going to let her speak about it. But the key is to helping kids become aware of, most of us know when we're feeling attacked, but we're not always really as on the ball about when we're participating in it. So becoming aware, time, discussions around awareness, and what does that feel like? Education's about awareness, shifting, altering our behaviors. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean there's no consequences. They're different things, mm-hmm. Okay? But creating a school climate where parents, adults involved, and that's everybody in this. Everyone in this school is an educator. Everyone. I hope you all know that about, regardless of what hat you wear in here. One of my best educators in high school was the custodian, Roy. Bless his soul, he's passed on, right? People are educators just by being in environments. So when we create a school that says, listen, we want you to know we're here to help your kids become better people. We're not looking to label them as the bully or the bad one, or, you know, they carry that through life if that goes on. We want to find alternatives. And it takes work. And it's not a quick fix. So I ask you, if you are one of the teachers in this building, the fact that you've come voluntarily means you probably aren't, but that thinks, oh, God, they're going to talk that kid to death, man. Just get him out of here. Just get that kid out of here. They're nothing but trouble. Okay, then what? You know, we have to, if we're not going to do the work as adults, and by the way, remember, it's not children creating these violent video games they're playing. We adults in this world are putting this stuff in kids' hands. It wasn't a kid who created the iPhone that can access anything and everything at the touch of a finger. Adults did this. If we're going to do this, we better take responsibility for the environments we're creating for them. We must. We must. And we have to take responsibility when a parent calls and says, that's my utopia. Mm-hmm. A parent phoning and saying, so aware as a parent, who's so loving as a parent to know, I want my child to get the support on all sides, that they become a kinder, better person in this world, and that we're here to help them do that, and to accept some of the consequences that go along, but not out of punishment. My experience has often been that kids will actually set a much harsher consequence for themselves when they're learning how to become self-aware. Way harsher. It isn't about consequence. We're looking for healing. We're looking for ways to... Imagine if, since there's so many men here, or a woman... Are you married, John? Imagine if your wife came and told you something that was really hard for her to tell you. And women, imagine your partners, if you have one, coming to you with something that's not wonderful about themselves, but they had the courage to come and share it. Are you thinking about how you're going to punish them when they finish talking? Maybe because you're hurt or upset or disgusted or whatever your initial reaction may be. But they were vulnerable enough, trusted you enough, they showed you a truth about themselves that's hard to look at. Do we want to create a world where we punish people when they reveal a truth to us? Or do we want to create conditions so that the truth sets them free? I'm opting for plan B there. So let's look at the process. First thing, we did a little bit of it together. If you're going to deal with this whatever scenario, and by the way, there's a difference just to clarify. Are you aware of the difference between bullying and conflict? Do you know how you might distinguish those two? They're not the same. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you hear that? One more time.
Division of power.
Okay. Bullying is about power. It's about a real power or a perceived power, one over another, or a number of people over another, or another, a bunch of others. So bullying is about domination and power. And it's usually rooted in a deep sense of powerlessness that's coming out in that form. Okay? Conflict is natural. It's inevitable. You live with people, you're going to have conflict. It's just that you see things differently. You don't always... But it's not, I'm the boss in this house and you do what I say. That's bullying. Parents can bully. Bosses can bully. I know you would never see such behavior from this woman. But, right? Teachers can bully. Kids can bully. Bullying is a behavior. I don't ever want you to identify a person as a bully, though. It's a behavior. No one is just one thing. It's a behavior. And it's a behavior that can be corrected. It's a behavior that can be improved upon. Okay? So taking time before you start to deal with conflict and or bullying, The same approach can be used, by the way, whether it's a bullying scenario or conflict between people. You just want to make sure if there's been five kids on one kid, that when you're doing this, that it's not the one here and the five over here and the power balance just physically is out. You set your chairs up differently and you do it, okay? You be aware of the environment, how it feels. You make sure you sit right beside the kid who's been the target. So bullies and targets. I don't like the word victim myself. I'm not a fan of it because victim is a state of mind. Anyone can be targeted. Anyone. Any one of us could be targeted. But we don't have to agree to be a victim. And the victim mindset is, especially if a kid's been targeted, to teach them what other people say to you does not make it true. And on that note, I'm going to share a lovely little teaching that Buddha taught. When he was first, if you don't know this about the Buddha, he was Gautama. Siddhartha was a very wealthy prince born into a very wealthy established life, everything good, very entitled. But he started to ask questions about why he was getting all of this and there's people starving outside. Nonetheless, very similar, same as Jesus' experience, going out to be with the people and speak to people. Lots of religious traditions teach this, and so do other non-religious traditions. The truth is the truth. For Buddha, though, as he started to become aware of his own inner struggles and getting some clarity on them, he started to talk to people, and people would gather to hear him. He was born of the Hindu tradition. Buddhism didn't exist before him, just like Christianity didn't exist before Jesus, right? So he started to have people gather to talk to him, and the Brahmin were very upset, very angry. Those were the high-up priests in the Hindu. They were getting very angry at, who's this guy coming and talking to the people, and they're not coming and listening to us anymore. So one of them came to Buddha, and he was angry and was spewing some venom at him. You don't know anything about suffering, and you're preaching about suffering. You don't know anything about struggle, and you're preaching about struggle. Yeah. And then he spewed some more toxin at him. Pick whatever language you'd want, whichever words you'd want. While this was going on, Siddhartha stopped and just said, have you ever invited anybody over for dinner? And he says, well, yes, of course. He said, and have you laid food out for them? He said, yes, obviously. He said, and if they don't eat the food, whose food is it? He said, well, if they don't eat it, I guess it's mine. And he said, I'm not eating what you're serving. And we can teach our children some version of that, that if people are spewing at them, they have an ability. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt them, but just recognize you don't have to eat it. You don't have to take it in and make it yours. To learn, one, create environments where we don't want to serve that to people, but also if it happens to be being served in the form of toxicity in our language and our behavior to others, to just become aware. That's yours, not mine. That's your anger, that's your hurt, that's your misery. I'm not going to make it mine. And that's true for us as adults, too, to be very aware of what we take in. Okay? So if we're in a calm state, if we're not taking on too much toxin in our life, being calm will make a difference in how we create a space with kids. Take a few slow breaths. Let them know that you're there because you care for all of them. You're not there to pick sides. You're not here to find out what really happened. If you're going into this trying to be a private investigator, please don't do it. Okay? This isn't about, I will find out the truth. I knew he was lying. No, you're not there. It's not even as important as them sharing what they need to share. Being right is not nearly as important as being loving. Okay? So go in with concern for the kids, not, I'm going to find out. Let them know that you're there to help them solve the problem. You're not here to punish them. And as often and to the best depth that you can, listen. Listen with empathy, not with, yeah. It goes the same old story. You'd be surprised what you hear if you cultivate the ability to listen with empathy and to not be looking for what you can point out is wrong in what they're doing. It's not going to be that helpful. You're going to do it naturally because that's what we're all conditioned to do. Find flaws, what's wrong, I can fix it. So just be aware and step back and let them speak. Do not go in criticizing. And a few breaths beforehand is a good thing. If you bring the group in, before you launch right in, you say, I don't know about you, but I'm going to take a few moments to have a few breaths. Let them giggle while you close your eyes. Let them. Sometimes they connect through that, because then they're, the, you know, you're the weird one and they're just having a chuckle together, right? But slowly but surely, some of them just like to do it too. But you're just modeling, I don't want to be angry with anyone in the room, but I can tell I am a bit angry because I heard what happened and it upsets me when I know people are hurt. So I'm going to take a few moments so I don't say anything to hurt anyone in here. And I don't want to judge you guys, but I think I might. So I'm just going to take a few moments. Right? But this is what happens. Our brains jump to judgment really fast. Then you begin. So you've let them know you're there to help. You're creating an environment where they feel safe. If you're thinking, yeah, but what about the little bleepity bleep who's figured it out? Oh, we're doing this whole process. I can get away with murder. Okay? If you're thinking that, bear with us. Okay? Bear with us. So, this is tough. Honesty. Honesty. Take a moment right now and ask yourself, this is hard, so please really do your best to do this. Think of the last time you didn't tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, that you withheld the truth or you twisted the truth or you changed the story altogether, that you didn't really tell the truth. Think of a time where somebody, for whatever reason, and it might even be one of your higher and more noble excuses for not telling the truth, like, I just didn't want to hurt their feelings. But just think. When was the last time you remember you didn't fully tell the truth? If you're in a relationship, you probably won't have to go that far back. But think about it. I'm hoping you can actually identify a situation that's going to help you understand the students in the process of this. Okay? The first thing about honesty is people don't tell the truth for one umbrella reason. It all falls under the same umbrella. Why did you not tell the truth? If you had to go back to when you were six, if you are that amazing that it was only when you were six you didn't tell the truth about something, whenever it was, what was it that stopped you from telling the truth? Identify that for yourself right now. What's that?
You don't want to get in trouble.
Fear of getting in trouble, fear of someone's opinion of you, right? What someone might think about you if they knew. Oh my, what would they think if they knew this, right? Fear of being in trouble or punished, some sort of negative consequence. Fear of someone's opinion of us. Any other fears you can think of that keep people from telling the truth?
Fear of people's reactions.
How they might respond. Will they reject you? Will they hurt you? Okay. That's a biggie. That's a real biggie, why people don't tell certain things. Fear that they won't be believed. But you notice, yep. Someone will be disappointed that the idea of you won't match who you really are. And that's connected to shame, right? That's a powerful, powerful inhibitor to the truth. I hope if, as teachers and as parents, if any of you are parents, put up your hand if you are a parent, okay? I encourage you, if you're ever going to use this kind of process or anything around this, to learn to say to your kids, Kelsey knows both of my daughters, and they've heard this since they were very young. I hope you know you can come and tell me anything, but I know that you won't tell me everything. And I don't expect you to. You don't owe me that. But don't ever swallow down things you're hurting. If you need to talk to Aunt Sharon, or if you need to talk to a teacher, if you need to talk to one of your friends' mom, know that it's okay. You're not betraying me. It's okay to talk to someone else. You don't owe me that. But I want you to know you can. And the reason is that, right, what that person will think of you if they knew this thing. People need to get stuff out, but they also sometimes need to have good, just like, I don't want this to be a burden for my mom or my dad or my friends. So this shame thing is big. Let's help minimize that for our kids, because they don't owe us the truth. the kids in our class, they don't have to tell us the truth. We're trying to help them see that it helps them to be able to talk about things. Okay? So same thing. You might not be the teacher they want to work it through with or the educator they want to work through. Don't take it personally. I said all the right things. I don't. Just relax. Okay? It's not personal. They might feel more comfortable. And you can say that. Is there someone else you think you'd like to talk to about this? I want to talk. I thought I was the best teacher in the school. Okay? Don't take it personally. People connect to different people for different reasons. Help create an environment where they can find the people they need to support them through it. It's going to get a chance to speak. And the reason for that is we want to teach kids how to respect each other and that we're going to listen to each other. And ask them, does everyone agree? And you have a little sheet there that has that on it. But does everyone agree that we can listen to each other? And some of them might be like this in the beginning, so just deal with it. It's not. There might be some of that initially, so just ease into it a bit, okay? Explain the importance of honesty, right? That we're not making you tell the truth. By the way, can you make anyone tell the truth? Is there any way you can force someone to tell the truth? What's your name in the green?
Diane.
Oh, you're Diane, I know, but other green? Annette, sorry, you told me before. Annette, you want like this. Are you sure? There's nothing you can do to make someone tell the truth. To make them tell the truth. Yeah. No, you can make them speak. But that doesn't mean you'll be getting the truth. Let's all point to terror tactics, right? that are used, right? We have ways of making you speak. That's right. They may say what they think you want to hear, but that doesn't mean you'll get the truth. This is important to understand. Truth is something that people offer, that they give. It's not a guarantee that you're going to get it. So unless you're creating conditions where they're more likely to not feel punishment coming, you can't force them. You create the space, and you let them know. That's how we communicate. That's how we foster healthy, trusting relationships. Can we agree to tell the truth and listen to each other? And then please look at the person who is speaking. I work with adults a lot of couples. This is not easy for adults. Someone's had an affair on someone else? Or with someone else? It's hard for people to look at each other. So be patient, but it's an important part of communication. When someone who's been bullying someone else actually starts to see them, it changes. Something shifts. They now see a person where they used to be detached from it. Creating a space where we look at each other, listen to the person, it will be helpful if you look at them. So when the kid's talking about what it felt like, the person who was detached when they were just with their buddies having a good howl now sees a person there. Okay, so the looking at the person matters. You cannot make them tell the truth. You can invite them. And they're more likely to tell the truth if they're not what? If they're not afraid, if they're not scared. Just like you're more likely to tell the truth if you're not afraid. Ownership. Help the child focus on what he or she did. This is the tricky part. Okay, because just like you, think of the last time you had an argument with somebody you're in relationship with. You're already gearing up about what they did wrong. They're gearing up about what you did wrong. And you're both gearing up and focusing on what the other person did wrong. Okay, yeah, but you know what? Okay, yeah, but what about? Okay, but I only did that because this is the nature of our self-defense. We all have these defense mechanisms. Our little ego protects itself fiercely. So when the kid says, and I'll give you, let's just take a scenario. Does anybody want to volunteer a scenario without any names? A scenario that you know happened that we could use as a test pattern here. That you know, or a scenario that's fairly common in a school, in your class or in the hallway or that you know of. That's a conflict. It's peace, love, and grooviness around here, eh?
Two students pushing each other on the
school. Okay. Perfect. It happens all the time, right? So someone who's on yard duty sees this, or perhaps another kid comes in who saw it and felt unsettled about it and wanted to make sure it didn't keep happening, whatever. Somehow, these two are brought in. Okay. Got the intro. Everybody's feeling the love vibe, right? So we're in there. We're going to have a chat. Now, they've agreed that we're going to listen to each other. Does anybody want to play the part of person? We'll just pick some name like Isabel. Isabel and Joseph. Those are just the two coming for whatever reason. Who will be Isabel? Thank you, Tennille. Come up here and be Isabel. We need a Joseph. And we're not going to get caught up in gender and say that only a male can play Joseph, because we're
Joseph if you're Isabel.
Sure. Go ahead. John, you want to be Isabel? Thank you. Tennille's offering to be Joseph. I need to look away, but okay. Unless somebody wants to begin, I'm going to just ask Joseph to start. Now, sometimes one does want to begin and say, can I start? All right. Okay, but unless somebody wants to begin. Okay, Joseph, do you mind if... And I've already done the intro. We've done all that, okay? So now just, do you want to tell me what happened outside? And I'm going to ask you to just do your best to tell the truth and focus only on what your part in it was, okay?
We were playing basketball, and Isabel took the ball away from me.
Okay. And what did you do when Isabel took the ball?
I pushed her. I got it back.
Okay. So what you did was push Isabel after she took the ball. Okay. So right now, we're not going to Isabel and say, okay, tell me. We're just going to focus on that part because that's her part. She was playing basketball and the ball got taken. Okay. Do you think that's the best thing you could have done in that situation?
Well, I got the ball back.
Okay. Isabel?
Joseph was hogging the ball all recess. Wouldn't give it up, wouldn't pass it.
Okay.
Everybody's saying pass, 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 Joseph, but wouldn't pass.
Okay. So you went in and took it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And go ahead.
I'm better than Isabel.
You're not that
good. Boys
get
complain.
Any baskets?
Oh. Totally.
This is, by the way, very, I don't know if this is super common in your world, but it was, right? Especially the boys and the girls playing a sport and not wanting the girls to play. This kind of stuff's pretty common. Okay, so your perception of this was that Joseph was keeping the ball all the time.
Yes.
And did you ask to play? Did you ask to be part of the game? You wanted to be also involved in the game? Were you allowed to play in the game at least?
Yes.
But you didn't get to ever?
Didn't get the ball.
Okay.
I took it.
And when you took it, what happened?
Got pushed.
Okay. And then what did you do?
Pushed back.
And then what did you do?
Pushed harder.
And then what did you do?
Fell down.
And then she cried.
Okay. So when you look at how you were playing the game, if Isabel, I'm trying to keep the names right here, if Isabel had the ball and was keeping it to herself the whole time, do you think you would have been having much fun playing?
No.
Okay. Do you think that Isabel wanting to play was fair?
Yeah.
Okay. So when she took the ball and you chose to push her, do you think that made things better or worse?
Worse.
And do you think when she pushed you and you pushed back, it made things better or worse? Do you think there's anything you could have done differently? Go right back. No, and I know you might be thinking, the kid's going to say no, but people who are using the process will tell you they actually are smart. They do. Often, not always, I'm not here selling you swampland in Florida. It's not... You know, it's not a picture-perfect thing, okay? But do you think you could have done anything differently to keep this pushing match from having happened?
I could have shared the ball.
Okay, so you could have passed a little more? Do you think that's more fun for everybody involved then?
Probably.
Is it less fun for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that. But it's not much of a game if there's no one else there to play with, is it? How long do you think they're going to still want to play if you never pass the ball?
They're not going to want.
Okay. So what do you think you could have done differently?
I could pass the ball
to other kids. Okay, that's one. If in this case where you didn't, we'll take it one step further where you didn't pass it and then the ball was taken, what could you have done differently there? Anything?
Say that again.
When Isabel did finally come and take the ball and you said you decided to push her, could you have done something differently then?
I didn't have to push her.
What could you have done differently?
I could have asked for the ball back.
Okay. So do you think that would have been a better option than the pushing match that happened?
Yeah.
What about you, Isabel? I get that you were frustrated because I'd be frustrated too. I understand that. But when she took the ball, or when you took the ball from her and then she pushed you, is there anything you could have done differently other than push her back?
Could have got help.
Okay. Do you think it makes you weak if you went to ask for help?
I'm a girl, right? No.
Really important point, though, isn't it? We won't go way off on the man box right now, but that's a really big thing. What if Joseph, and this was Frank, that might be a different dynamic to be very aware of, okay? Not, we don't want to make massive sexist assumptions here, but we have to live in the real world. That's a big issue for guys, to ask for help. That's a big issue. So we want to teach them. We're living in a world where actually smart guys do ask for help. Smart guys don't punch the crap out of someone else as a solution to a problem. Okay? But notice that as a male, he said, wait a second, oh, I'm the girl again. Okay, yeah, that would be okay. And we laughed, but that's a reality that you grew up with, is it not? Okay? So in this case, though, as Isabel, do you think you could have done something different? And what did you say?
Go get help.
Okay, could have got help. I could have walked away. They'll come up with things. They will. They do. Just so in case you think this is all just fantasy land, it happens. They do. When you ask and you don't tell them, you should have walked away. You should have passed the ball. Now get out of here and do it right next recess. It doesn't. There's no self-awareness. There's no ownership. None of that gets to happen. Just ask them. You'll be surprised. They do answer. Okay? And they answer fairly wisely. Because guess what? Isabel didn't want to be end out on the ground. And it doesn't always go that way. Isabel could have left Joseph on the ground. This isn't always our healthiest way to go at things. So when you ask them, contrary to the, you know, everybody loves to see the fight on the hockey rink, and people don't like being in fights. They're unsettling. People aren't enjoying it. If they're in there, something's unsettled in them. If they're in there swinging their fists, something's out of balance. Okay? So far, you've got the honesty, you've got the ownership, right? They both mentioned what they've done, and you've given them a chance to think about, could you have done it differently? You're not saying, you know you should have done this. Just, do you think you could have done it differently? They will come up with it. Would you say most of the time they do come up with it? Kelsey? And my experience is most of the time they do too. Okay? Not all of the time. That's very high marks.
But they do.
Yeah. It's an impressive thing to watch people own their own.
Sometimes you have to do it the next day. Like, yep. You're not ready that day.
Yep.
You might have to. You can't do it all in one day. Think time.
Okay. We're going to move on to this part of it. The option for an apology. Now, maybe kicking it old school, we would have said, now what do you want to say to Isabel? Isabel, what do you want to say? No, we're not doing that because they're already being essentially told they have to apologize. So not every single time, but certainly in your class and stuff, talking about why apologies matter. Think for yourself for a moment. A time where you hurt someone, intentionally or otherwise, perhaps unintentionally. When you had a chance to make amends, if and when you've done that, maybe you haven't done it enough, maybe right now it's coming up for you, I have some pretty unresolved stuff there. That might be going on for you. Picture what it feels like when you make peace, when you actually say sorry. Think of a time where you've done that. How do you feel afterwards? I'm not trying to tell you how you feel, so just think about it. Does anybody feel lighter when they've apologized? Okay. We feel better. You're not carrying the weight around of being this awful person and this unresolved thing. So giving an apology actually is a really healing thing. It's a very helpful thing. But we're not forcing it. So please notice, it's always an attempt, an opportunity to foster empathy. This isn't like the world's worst thing. This is an everyday kind of thing, but we deal with it. Empathy and apologies, these are powerful. And by the way, they're part of the 10 character attributes, right? The empathy piece for your board. Restore dignity. Where you've done a harm, you put a good in place. Okay, that's what an apology is. You put a positive in place of a harm that was done. Never forced. Create a space for the authentic feelings. And this is how we do it. Okay, you've just assessed it. You're there. It sounds like it started over here. But we don't say, since you were the problem, since you were the trouble. No, we just say, you know, Joseph. Joseph, when you look back at this and you realize you could have done it differently, is there anything you want to say to Isabel?
Sorry, Isabel.
And by the way, I just want to say, you don't have to say sorry. I just know it's always helped me feel better when I say sorry. But if you'd like to.
I didn't mean to push you.
Is there anything you'd like to say?
That's okay. I know you're better. I just want the ball a little bit. Not as much as you.
Listen, they'll do it. They will have these little things, okay? And do they hold hands and skip off from the square? Probably not, right? But that's an opportunity to, you know, just offer it. If they say not ready to say, you don't have to do it right now. It might be tomorrow. It might be next week. It might be never. But I hope you're not 25 and thinking back, geez, I wish I didn't push Isabel. You might think I'm crazy, but I have a very strong memory, which is a big part of why I do peacemaker work with kids and stuff, of not stepping up for a girl who was being really savagely bullied when I was in grade 6. Horrible. She was the poorest kid in the school. We were all poor, but she was like the most visibly poor and really struggled. She had a stutter. It was just heartbreaking. And I still, sometimes, she comes up in my mind and I think, and there's a whole story behind that that I won't get into. Now I'm sure Angie's heard it before, but that I did pass her years later on Jarvis Street in Toronto. If you know what Jarvis is in Toronto, you'll know that's where hookers line the streets. And my husband and I were on the way to Maple Leaf Garden back in the day when it still existed. And I looked over and it was, I won't say her name, it's being recorded, but I saw her and I was like, and this whole wave of pain came up in me. The same awful feelings I had watching it happen to her. I wasn't part of it, but I saw it happen. And I didn't go in. I didn't protect. I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything. So bystanders bear the pain of these things too. So I'm being a bit facetious when I say, I don't want you to be 25 and thinking, geez, I wish I hadn't pushed Isabel down. Right? But this stuff, we're good by nature. It hurts us to be part of things that are destructive and hurtful. It really does. I don't think I have any wings spreading out of my back. I'm just a person like you, and I see it over and over. People suffer when they don't heal things that they're carrying around. So you've given them an opportunity. These little lovelies chose to take it. And this is the last part. This is the P part. Yeah.
I just had a question.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you want me to go back to that screen?
Yeah, when you said, would you like to say anything to, before you do that, you need to take the time to explain the value of empathy, right?
Yeah.
Is that just the piece of saying,
absolutely. And having a script, where you go, would you like to say anything now? And what could you have done differently? No, you're all wise women and man. You have skills, use them. But yeah, talk about it, right? Talk about how it feels good to apologize. It's really good when someone, when you've been in an awful place and someone else came to be with you and said, you know, I saw what happened to you. I'm sorry. And that's another thing we can do in our classes, where cultivate kindnesses by saying, if you know stuff's happening out there, I don't want to hear every detail, but if you know someone was hurt today outside or inside this building, you have a lot of power in you. You can go and let them know that you saw it and you're sorry that it happened to them, that they're not alone. These are powerful things. Don't get into big, long lectures. They feel it. They're like, I can do that. And they do it. Not all of them. Okay? Thank you for asking that question. Yeah. And as long as this has taken us to go through this, it won't be long like this when you're doing it with them. So the plan part, that's the P part in hope. Okay, the question is, how do you want to resolve this? Do you think when you go out to recess and you play basketball, you want to be pulling each other down onto the ground again next time? You think you can handle this differently? How do you guys want to resolve it? What do you want to do?
I don't want to play too much anyway. I just want to do this with the ball.
Okay, and we're hoping Isabel isn't a blushing little, you know. We hope she wants to play. We hope she wants to sink three-pointers. We hope she does, right? We want girls to be playing sports just like boys, if that's what they want to do. And we want boys to be dancing, if that's what they want to do. We want people to get to do what they want to do. But in terms of this, let them solve it. And whatever it is, this one's a small one. Sometimes they're big issues, right? But this is a kind of a small on a schoolyard thing. But it wouldn't be small if it didn't get dealt with. And then after school, it was like, fight, fight, right? And we giggle, but it's terrifying when you're sitting in class thinking, oh my God, is Joseph going to come after me after school again? Like that, just sick inside, right? So you heal, you try to deal and heal. Would you like, in this case, Isabel, but in all reality, if it's a scenario we're in, what do you think you guys can do to make sure this doesn't happen? Let's start with you since it started there.
Get the girls their own ball.
Let's talk about that for a moment. Being a strong advocate for all genders and all forms of people, I would use this as a teachable moment. But get the girls their own ball.
Well, maybe not me, but some of the girls are better than you. Or just as good.
And let them have a moment. Let them have this conversation. You don't have to control the conversation. Really, do you think girls should have to play in one place and boys should have to play in another? Just because we have a whole Olympic system built that way, do you think that's the only way it can go? But things are changing. The next generation are changing these things. They're changing all kinds of things. Get them far bigger visions of how it can go. But do we really need to? And, you know, in this case, Joseph might say, well, we do have a boys' basketball team and we do have a girls' basketball team. Why don't they just play their own separate ones? They might say, and it's true, our whole school system's built sports around this way, right? So, well, how do we give them an intelligent answer to that? Just get your own. My daughter Jenna went through this in grade 3 around soccer. So it's a real issue, and it was upsetting to her. She went on to be a good soccer player. She didn't curl up and say, I won't play soccer. So how do we...
Well, some of our tournaments are mixed. Could we not mix at recess?
That's okay. Give them an opportunity because that may be the case, right? And in the schoolyard, maybe you don't have enough for two separate teams. Or how many of the girls in this room would say, sure, let's have the girls play the boys. See you at recess. Let's have some fun. Game on, right? There's no reason they can't come up with it. It doesn't have to be hostile. It could be fun. But it sounds like in that case they were playing together because there might not have been enough of everything else. But that's a chance to talk about it. What difference does it make what your anatomy is? Is anybody being maimed in the hallway? should we be responding to those screams? I hear screeching. They'll solve it. It's fine. Okay. So they will 9 times out of 10 come up with their own solution. But if they don't, that's when you say, do you want a little bit of help? Ask them first if they can solve it themselves. They can't, say. Same with your own children. Okay, do you need help creating a plan? A little bit of a plan. Well, could you pass the ball a little more? Do you think that'll make for a little more fun? If they need help, if they're sitting there stymied. Okay? When you ask simple things like, in this one it was this, but when it's a bullying situation where you ask questions like, is this the kind of person you want to be? I've asked that question to so many people of all sizes, including myself. Is this the person I want to be? I know immediately, just like they do, that isn't the person I want to be. I don't want to be a bully. I don't want to be mean. Asking the question gives them an opportunity to touch base to their better self. Okay, so don't stress in thinking that they don't have it in them. They do. And if you need to assist them, and then you say, do you both agree to this? Like, do you both agree you can play and pass the ball a little more? Do you know that it does happen that people stop wanting to play with people who don't share balls in sports? Have that real conversation. It's true. Nobody likes the hog. Right? It's just not a fun way to play. So that's what I call reality-based learning. Just say to them, have you ever been on a team where someone hogs the puck the whole time? I have some nephews who play high-level hockey. They don't like playing with hogs, even in the NHL. It's not fun, right? Have the real conversation about it. Do you both agree to this? And at the end, and most of them were like, yeah, if yes, you can have them just do a little pound, you know, high five, whatever, right? You don't over milk it. You don't like, okay, let's all. And so you guys are going to play together from now on? No, they might not, but they might. Let them have some space, okay? More hostile issues, don't force that they're going to hang out. Sometimes a resolution is something as simple, and I use different ones from high school years of teaching, including my own daughters. Sometimes you just, in order to make peace, sometimes you just agree. You're not going to be in each other's space for a little bit. Sometimes that's the resolution, right? That's okay. Not everything is, okay, let's get, you just need space sometimes. Guess what? They come back on their own. Give yourself some space. Sometimes that's a resolution. And sometimes they'll say that, I think I just need a bit of space. I had a couple in my retreat yesterday. They needed space. They unfortunately live under the same roof with three children, so they had to do it. It was like, honestly, take some space, because before this session's out, it's not all going to get resolved. It sounds like you both need a little bit of space for yourself to walk through this a bit. Give yourself some permission to take a bit of space. Because when you do open your mouths, what's happening? They're attacking each other. Sometimes you just take a bit of space. Next time we come back together, think about what you would like to say that might actually create some peace here. Here. Yep.
Does this step look different after this is reoccurring?
Yeah. In fact, sometimes you don't even have to go through most of the steps. This is what's interesting about it. Once, and that's why if you have a school climate that's fostering a common language, it actually gets to the point where they're already at the apology before you're even asking. Like, they get there and they realize, sometimes you don't need the honesty and the ownership piece. They're just like, you know what? I'm sorry. That was not nice. I shouldn't have done that. Sometimes they're right. Have you had that experience where they're sometimes right there? And a plan is only around something that's going to be a recurring issue that goes on, that you can see the potential for it recurring, right? But the most simple thing around a plan is that you're going to be aware of how you treat people. Yes, I do want to say, though, the structure is there in place because I've seen that the structure actually really works. But once you start doing it, and I've said this every talk I've done on this, do not do that every time there's a, wait, it sounds like we need to sit down and have a whole process. They're going to want to shoot themselves through the head. Okay, don't do this every time there's an issue. Okay, seriously, please, I beg of you. But the big stuff, yeah. The big stuff, yeah. And the smaller stuff, just like, to sometimes it look like, I guess think you need to, I'm sorry. they can figure it out. Sometimes they'll jump right to it. But in the process, it's worth using it enough till they start to feel like it's in place.
I have a great example. We have a little guy that we did a lot of this with. A lot. And the other day, first he reported to Lori that two people, I think he was to her first, that two people he was finding.
Times the staff room was the most hostile place to go. Good people, one-to-one, so many good people, but it's sometimes, not always, sometimes the schools I had the pleasure of teaching in had hostile staff rooms. Be mindful. What are you feeding? What are you cultivating? What are you growing? Okay? So be aware, make some choices about, do I want to add to this? This is a really low energy. Do I want to be contributing to it? Practice self-awareness and model it, right? Be conscious of what you're modeling for your students. If you have to be right all the time in your classroom, become aware of that. You're teaching them that being right is the highest good. It isn't the highest good, okay? There are other higher things than being right, like being forgiving. Like being compassionate. The world needs a lot more of that. Okay? Let your students know that you are also still learning and growing and that you make mistakes. Easier said than done. A lot of us have a hard time with that. I was a person who had a hard time admitting that I made mistakes, but I found how liberating it was when I finally would admit it. Yeah, I was a bonehead. Sorry. Okay? Apologize when you've not handled a situation well. How many of you are okay apologizing to your class if you lost it? Ever. Somewhere along your teaching or education career. It's a really powerful thing as a parent also to be able to say, I'm sorry. I didn't handle that well. Okay? And this demonstrates wisdom and personal dignity. We want our kids to learn that apologies are a sign of strength and wisdom, not a weakness. It's not a weakness. So, recognize those?
Yes.
If you don't, those are the Avon-Maitland District School Board's 10 character attributes. And every one of those has a great individual need for attention on them. But that process will make room for every one of those things, including this one as the people supporting them. Persevere. It doesn't happen perfectly every time, and it doesn't mean that they live happily ever after. None of us do. Conflict arises as part of living. Okay? All of those, all of these things. And the optimism one there, by the way, that's us holding a space of optimism for what our students, our children, what we can become as people. So let's end on this, shall we? And then I want you to flick that off in case there were some specific questions. May we continue to support our students and each other in creating kinder, safer schools for all. And that includes us. And if you're a staff that has unresolved things amongst you, I think that it's a worthwhile thing to actually spend time. Doesn't mean you have to agree with each other. You realize that, eh? Solutions aren't about agreeing with each other about everything. It means respecting that we see it differently and that we can live decently and kindly with each other. We don't have to see it the same way. And, well, I don't like her anymore. Well, that's your choice to hang on to judgments. It'll make you feel sick in the end, right? You're not able to forgive someone. You're the one eating the rat poison and thinking they're going to get sick. Okay, staying hostile makes you ill. It's really not highly recommended for you. So creating these cultures in our schools, whether it's with our class or even as staff members, a way to be kind and decent and dignified. We can't teach it if we're not being it. At least we can't teach it very well.